Was a story, a very powerful story, about an unfortunate passing of all the children of this particular woman. Mm-hmm. And even though she was warned to be able to, that she had to somehow manage her grief, she was not able to do so. So let's go back. I think the story ends. Story ends where she's warned by Rav Huna, who was her neighbor, that she should not continue to cry the way she's crying, and he tells her that and he tells her that if she doesn't stop crying, ultimately she's going to die as well, and that's what happens. And then the Gemara comments on that. We're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 lines up from the bottom. Near the end of the line, Al tivku l'meisav al tanudu lo. Pasuk says, one should not cry for the mace and not be mekonein. The wailing and the special form of noises that they would make at the funeral to arouse the feelings of anguish. Al tivku l'meis yosher midai v'al tanudu lo yosher mikashir. So the pasuk implies, the Gemara tells us, pasuk in Yirmiyah, it's meant to teach us that we shouldn't cry too much and we should not go overboard more than the shir. What is the shir? Haketzad. Shlosha yamim lebechi. You got there? Chavzayim and beis. Shlosha yamim lebechi v'shiva lehesped. Shlosha legiyot l'tispores. We have a breakdown of how things proceed. 3 days of crying. Svasemis points out over here that the simple pshat in the Gemara is that you're not obligated to cry, but that's the healthy range during which a person should cry. But obviously, it's not that you have forced yourself. It's not that you don't fulfill your mitzvah, but it's appropriate. The shiva lehesped, 7 days of hesped, u'shloshim giyatz v'tisboros, 30 days for ironing, pressing clothing, getting a haircut, and so forth. Mikan ve'elach amar Kadosh Baruch Hu i'atam rachamanim bo yosher mimeni. After that, then Hashem, as it were, says to Klal Yisrael, you are not more rachamanim than I am. So what does that mean? So it could be the pshat is what the Ibn Ezra says in Parshas Re'eh, pasuk we're going to focus on again in a moment. Banam atem l'Hashem alkechem lo sisko didu. You should, first of all, the introduction of the pasuk is you are the children of Hashem, and you should not be misgoded. You should not cause yourself injury. You should not hurt yourself when you're in Avelus. It has to have a limit, right? We see even nowadays, we discussed this the other night, even nowadays there are some cultures, maybe not Western culture, but in Islamic practices, mourning practices include like really hurting yourself, and the Torah says that's prohibited. It used to be that was the way of the Avodah Zarah, and it is prohibited. So in that context, the pasuk opens up by saying, Banam atem l'Hashem alokeichem. So Ibn Ezra says, Hashem is calling us children. So usually that's a sense of endearment. You know, we love you. But it's more than that. A child needs to realize that the way his parents are acting may not always make sense to him, but in the long run, they're intended for the best. In the long run, there's something which is in store for him that is to his benefit and will be healthy, will be in his best interest, even if you can't understand it. So the Rahmanas, sometimes the Rahmanas means the love of Hashem doing something which appears to be something tragic, something hurtful, something which is painful, but a parent can say to a child that I have your best interest in mind. So if Hashem says, I have your best interest in mind, and at some point, you may not understand it, but you have to have a certain belief that it is indeed ultimately for the good. So and that's where we should
expect you to control your emotions even if you can't help
yourself. Yeah, that's what it says. We're gonna elaborate on that in a second.
Can I make a comment? I mean, I would also think there should be different degrees of mourning based on who you're mourning for. But to be losing a child is probably the most tragic thing I could think of.
So the Gemara says something along those lines.
A woman from mother to be over mourned for,
It's not an easy thing, but the other half of this conversation, which no one's expected to sort of digest it and internalize it the first time you hear it, it's a lifelong journey to try to mold our feelings and thoughts. And she didn't drop that on the spot because she reacted the wrong way. Rav Huna had patience with her and tried to get her to think. But at the end of that puzzle, let's just go to do what is the reason behind limitations. What's the reason behind limitations? The Ramban already on the spot, as well as the Kli Yakar, other Mefarshim right there in Perek Yudalad of Dvarim, they say that this is really where we find the Torah referencing the concept of not even Tchias HaMeisim, but the fact that the neshama is eternal, the fact that there is a life after Olam Hazeh. That's something we have to spend a lot of time contemplating and appreciating. That doesn't just stop here. It doesn't just stop here. It doesn't mean it's easy to do. There's a story which I was reviewing it today, you know, but I cry whenever I think about this story. It appears in the biography of Rav Kook. Rav Kook, Nebuch lost a daughter at the age of 12. She was 12 years old. And the way the story goes, his Talmidim, they were sitting around the table, they were learning, all of a sudden they heard a big crash from outside, and Rav Kook's mother his wife was screaming. And the poor child had fallen off the stairs and died shortly thereafter. Terrible, terrible story. And she was, very close to her grandparents, who you can imagine Rav Kook having to inform his parents that terrible, terrible story. Terrible, terrible story. And nevertheless, at the Shiva, the way his Talmidim retell the story, he was sitting there and they could hear his wife crying in the other room. And he just said quietly, he said, I'll read her the Lashon. She let out a painful cry, and Rav Kook said in an undertone to himself, I've told her so many times, she can't cry so much about the death of our daughter. Instead, we have to appreciate that Hashem gave her to us for 12 years, 12 special years, and those 12 years, she enlightened us. She brought so much happiness to us. Hashem nasan, Hashem lakach, yishmo, you know, mevorach. It's not easy, not easy. Talking about someone who was a tremendous, tremendous, of tremendous character to be able to this is Aaron HaKohen by Yidom Aaron. So no one's going to tell you that this Gemara is going to be easy to digest, but we have to at least have an appreciation. The neshama, some ask, why is that we say Dafka HaShiva, Hamokim Menachem Eschem Soshar Veil Tzion Hashem? Why do we use that particular reference to Hashem, Hamokim? We don't usually use it in regular conversation. There's a handful of times In the Haggadah. The Haggadah is an interesting example. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Usually we say Hashem. We have a lot of names to use for Hashem. Why there? So the Chidah emphasizes this point that we have to believe the Neshama is in a better place. So Madan Yashar said, based on that concept, maybe HaMakom Menachem, the place where the Neshama is supposed to serve as a consolation for us. Difficult to digest, but at the same time, something that needs a lot of thought and internalization.
What does that come from? I mean,
it means that whatever I'm doing, along the lines of Ibn Ezra, whatever I'm doing for you is for your best. So don't think, if you're crying over what you've experienced, don't think that, you know, that whatever, the fact that I brought it about, Hashem says, is because I have rachmanas. So you're mourning over something which expresses your, you know, the loss of this child, for example, right? You think you love him more than I do? I love him more than you could ever imagine. He's my child too. And if I felt that this was what had to be done, his life had to be taken, then, yeah.
It seems like it's missing the participle of that sentence. It's like,
what do you mean?
He's saying more, are you more, you're not more compassionate than I am. How compassionate is Hashem? What is the comparison?
It means that Hashem's that notion of Banam Atem Hashem Elokeichem, you're my children. So if I know what's best for you, and at the same time I have an infinite love for my children, right? No. So I'm not mourning over it. At some point I got over it as well, Kaviyachol, right? So then you have to be able to get over that as well. The Ritva goes one step further and says the reason why she was punished ultimately was because it was almost like she had a taina, she had a complaint against Hashem, and there's only so much you can have a complaint. So I think that's really the distinction.
Or it's a lack of belief.
It's.
Yeah, but that's part of the mourning part. Anger is actually one of the parts of grief. Yeah.
The grief is there, but at some point it's got to be brought into, you know, maybe she needs to see a mental health professional. It expresses a lack of belief that everything's for the best. If it doesn't end at any point, right? So yes, there's grief, but it has to be worked through. Yeah, not so simple. One halachic observation over here. It's interesting that the Gemara says the first 3 days is for crying, and the crying shouldn't be as intense, and maybe not at all after 3 days. What does it say? 7 days for Hesped, right. So of all the things that the Gemara could have chosen to express that at Shiva you cut off that level of behavior, it only chooses one thing, right? How come it doesn't say 7 days for wearing non-leather shoes, right? It only chose Hesped. There's a whole list of things we could have said are only 7 days. So the post can say, could be from there you see that if a person wants to adopt an additional chumra on himself, as far as how he conducts, the Avelos or Shloshim, could be he's allowed to extend the rules of Shiva beyond the 7 days. Just Hesped, not supposed to have, you know, every morning get up and make another speech about the Niftar.
But how they define a eulogy, because people make eulogies at the Shloshim.
This is a good question. This is a very important question. Yeah, the Hesped that we have nowadays is not the Hesped. It was much more intense. It was much more emotional. And they hired people. We've discussed this before. They hired people, professionals, you know, to get up there. And it was really something tragic. It's rare that you see such a Hesped, even someone trying to give a Hesped that is designed to really bring people, break them down. We're machmer. You know, there's certain limitations on Hesped. And we're not so careful to observe them, you know, in the strict sense of the...
What do you mean by limitations?
I mean, let's say on Erev Shabbos, okay, on Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, yeah. Someone dies on one of those days, not supposed to give a Hesped. So,
actually, I was told that my mother was actually... I was told, it's okay to give a Hesped, but don't get too emotional.
Right, so what does that mean? Either it's a Hesped or it's not a Hesped. Right. So in some communities, I think in the German communities... They're makbid. The whole funeral takes about 5 minutes. You know, really. They don't say kelmole. They don't say anything. What we try to advise a family member is to say that we should highlight some of the important lessons we can learn from the person's life, but it shouldn't be something which brings people to a very strong emotional reaction.
But a lot of times they'll say, but today you're not allowed to give a Hesped. Right. But if I was allowed to give a Hesped, this is what
right.
I would have said.
Nish Chanukah, correct. You know, like a... Okay.
So, we can't say anything, but...
So it's not ideal. It's not ideal. If it's literally going to mirror precisely what it would have been on a regular day, so again, you can make the argument. The reason why that has, made it under the radar, so to speak, is because our Hespedim are not what, what the average Hesped was in those days. That's the impression you get. But it should still be, measured. It should still be,
some days of Hesped. Yeah. Are you bringing on more Bechi?
So not necessarily. I hear the point. I hear the point. Is there a different type of Bechi that's being referred to in the first 3 days? The Hesped, even if it doesn't bring about, mamish, a breakdown of, crying. Again, we've discussed in the past. I'm speculating a little bit. We've discussed in the past that the first 3 days, some people don't have... they don't come and visit at all. They don't pay shivkol in the first 3 days because the oval at that point is so engrossed, the bechi that's being described is so all encompassing that they're not even ready to hear from anybody. So it could be it was so intense, that the bechi we're talking about was something so overpowering that perhaps it did extend a little bit of crying past the past the 3 days, but it wasn't to the same extent. Again, it's hard to know. Yeah.
Talk about the person that passed away. Yeah. Would that be considered like Hesped?
So,
if you do that during the show,
that's what you should do, shouldn't you?
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Yeah. So, look, we don't impose limitations as far as I've seen. Let's say a person's sitting Shiva during Hanukkah. We don't tell them, no, you're not allowed to talk about, just come, nod, say hamakom and leave. We don't say that. We do say that the family at the funeral should use some restraint. So, evidently, that's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. A one-to-one conversation or one to a few people, and it's not going to be a prepared, concerted effort to evoke the same. That when people speak at the Shiva, they're just sort of sharing their thoughts and, sometimes they're saying over what they said at the Hesped. It's true, but it doesn't have the same impact. It's not the same. Again, it's hard to give precise definitions. Very hard to give precise definitions. Okay, but the point is we do, halacha l'maaseh, we do extend past the first 7 days. A lot of the things that we practice during Shloshim are not, strictly speaking, required, but they're universal in Minhag Yisrael, such as limitations on bathing. That's not mentioned over here, right? It says the first 7 days should be the limit for Hesped. In theory, if you wanted to extend limitations on bathing past 7 days, that would be okay. Not that anyone wants to, But Ashkenazi practice is that we treat the shloshim as similar to the 9 days. You know, nowadays we're accustomed to taking showers more often than in the old days. You know, George Washington, I think, took a shower once a week, took a bath once a week. You know, but now we need, for hygiene, for just basic comfort, we need to bathe more often. But it should be done also on an as-needed basis, and like we do during the 9 days. It shouldn't be a warm shower. It should be something with a closer to lukewarm temperature, because the minhag, at least amongst the Ashkenazim, for sure, was to extend that aspect of the 7 days to the 30 days. Okay, so you see from here, the Gemara chooses Hesped specifically because there are elements of the Shiva that do extend into Shloshim voluntarily. Okay, let's keep going. So Gemara now quotes the Pasuk, B'chu b'chol l'holech. You should cry for the one who is going. Amar Rav Yehuda l'holech blobanim. There seems to be an extra permission to cry more than normally for someone who dies without children. Right. So it doesn't mention the example you brought up earlier. The Gemara seems to come down hard on the poor woman. But at the same time, someone who dies without children, that's considered a greater tragedy. I mean, some of those kids may have been, children who didn't have their own kids, right? That's a simple pshat you get from the Gemara. But someone who dies without children is a unique tragedy. It's interesting, Psak, this quote in the Chazon Ish's biography. Let's say you have two members of the Israeli army, and we have to call up the reserves. And there's a number of reserves that they have to call up. And they're going to go to the front lines. And you have a choice between two soldiers. Okay, these are halachic questions that people need to deal with in the army. Do you choose a reservist who is married and has a wife and a couple kids, or do you take a single guy who's 19, 20 years old? So most people, I've taken a survey before. Most people answer, well, you should take the young kid, the 20 year old, because the other guy's got a wife and a kids. Have rachmanis. That's not the halacha. The halacha is you take the older person who has the family, send them out to the front lines, because the younger guy has not had a chance to have children, and that makes a huge statement about.
It almost mirrors it mentions who planted a field and hasn't.
Right. Someone who was Makadish woman, he didn't marry her yet. Right. Could be it's related. I'm not sure. That might be a different consideration. But it does definitely bring you back there. Yeah. Yeah. So it says a lot about the value of children to in Yiddishkeit, which we all know is very important. Okay, Rabbi Shubin Levi, Lo Azul Bay Avla Almanda Ozub Lo Bani. Dechsiv b'chol b'chol l'holich, ki lo yoshuv od, or a s eretz maladeto. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi learned from this pasuk that puts the emphasis on the avelos for someone who has no children, and he would not attend a shiva unless the person was someone who died without children. Again, he wasn't neglecting his mitzvah. The pshat is that he was learning 24/7. So you learn 24/7. You have to be selective as far as which mitzvahs you put on the side. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, right? He and his son were in a cave for 12 years. Buried in the sand, and they were learning nonstop. So Gemara says that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is exempt from certain mitzvahs that other people are not exempt from, as far as tefillah and kriyasma and so forth, because they were literally learning without interruption. So someone like that has the prerogative to pick and choose. Now I would imagine, because this is unfortunately Gemara in Ksubas Daf Yudzayin, if there's a funeral procession walking by, coming past the Beis Medrash, you have to get out of the Beis Medrash and you stand by the door, you walk with them for a few feet, or you help out in whatever way you have to. There's certain aspects of avelos that you do have to be mevatel Torah for. The Gemara says it very clearly. But, he went to the funeral. He said, Hamakim menachem eschem, by the shura as they were finishing. So it wasn't like he was missing out on the mitzvah of nicham avelim or the levaya. But when push came to shove, he felt that unless it was a unique tragedy, then his mitzvah of Talmud Torah prevailed. Again, he didn't get up in shul and say, nobody go to the shiva house. That was something on his level, in his particular situation, that he felt was appropriate. Okay, the Gemara has another drasha from this pasuk, very, very important limud. Rav Huna Amar, Zesh Av Ravei Rav Ashinaba. Rav Huna understood the pasuk of B'chu B'chol Holech, that someone is going. What does it mean, going? It means they're moving on a certain trajectory and they're not going to stop. And that's talking about a person who does an Aveira and repeats the Aveira. What's that about? So the Gemara references what is quoted a few times in Shas. Rav Huna Latayme, Tam Rav Huna Kevin Sha'avar Adam Aveira of Ashinaba Hutralo. Once a person has performed an Aveira, it becomes mutter from him. In fact, the Gemara, Hutralo Sakadaitach? What does that mean? Just because I did the Aveira once, I did the Aveira twice, Great. You know, 612. Wonderful. No. Ela'ema nisus lokeater becomes as if it is permissible for him. The breakdown of natural inhibition, once a person has already lost that sense of sanctity for the mitzvah, is very, very hard to get back. I think I told you the story about Rav Shechter's grandchildren Friday night when they're walking through the streets of Yerushalayim, they see a car driving in the distance, they say, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Why? Because they must be on the way to the hospital to have a baby. Ah. Their parents taught them not to see Chilul Shabbos and automatically react, oh, someone is violating Shabbos. Mm. Because if you interpret it for the good, some say that this is the pshat in the mitzvah of Dal Nekav Schus, to judge favorably, not simply because it's a nice thing to do to give a person the benefit of the doubt, but it also helps you protect your own sense of sanctity for whatever it happens to be. Because once there's that breakdown, once you see it in the environment, once you see it around you, it becomes much more difficult for a person to withstand and to feel the same importance for that. That's why the Gemara says, Kol Aroa Sota B'Kukula Yazer Atmo Menayayim. If you're standing there by the Sota, then you know, your reaction to watching her blow up is, I'm going to go become a nazir, and I'm going to stay away from wine because I see what alcohol does. People can do crazy things they never planned to. So the Mepharshim ask, I understand. If you're standing there by the Sota and you watch this miraculous explosion in front of your very eye, I don't need to be a nazir. I got enough, I witnessed it firsthand, right? So the Baal Musar say, no, just the fact that you were standing there and it's entered your brain that a Jewish woman could, God forbid, commit adultery, it's just not going to have the same, aura. That mitzvah, the Ten Commandments, just not going to have the same aura in your sensitivities that it was before. Just the reality that it could happen in our society. That's something very important. We have to be careful of, the exposure we have from our surroundings, what becomes normalized because it's in the outside world, ultimately, chips away and penetrates our own sensitivities and the sanctity that we want to maintain as religious Jews. Something to think about. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Am Rabbi Levi, Avol Shoshi Yom Risharam, Yiras Atzmo Ki'ilu Cherev Munachas Lo Bein Shtei Yarei Chosov. A person who's in Avelos the first 3 days, it's still a very tense time of din when a family member is lost. So the implication is that, there's a strengthened, there's a heightened focus of judgment on the family. So those first 3 days, you have to feel as if there's a cherub, there's a sword above my neck, over my shoulders, or bein shtei yarchosav, between my legs. Mishlosha ad shiva kilu menachas lo kenegdo b'keren zavis. During the shiva, for the day 3 to day 7, it's not as intense, but this proverbial sword is, so to speak, hanging out in the corner. It's still there, it's in the room. Mikan ve'el kilu overes kenegdo b'shuk. After that, as the avails continues, as you walk down the street, you should know that the cherub is not so far away. That's a little bit scary. It's sort of the other side of the coin. On the one hand, we're saying you can't have avelus too far, overboard. But what Rav Kook was saying, even though he was strong, was not, God forbid, to suggest that a person should just be impervious and just ignore, and be cold. The Radvaz was asked about a certain Gadol B'Yisrael who seemed to be emotionless after the loss of a family member. And the Radvaz says that's not okay either. There has to be a balance. The Rambam says something very powerful. The Rambam says that if someone is not mis'abel at all, hareza achzari. Now, achzari literally means cruelty. Now, I'm not sure that's a word we would have chosen. It's insensitive. It's inappropriate.
It seems to others that he's achzari. He may not be.
Right. So what is that term achzari? So it could be the pshat is the Rambam uses that term achzari elsewhere in the laws of fast days and taniyos. The Rambam says that the mindset a person is supposed to have in a fast day is that all calamities, everything that we're disturbed and we're davening for, that a fast day is instituted, nothing happens by chance. And if a person thinks, oh, everything is random, no reason why this should happen today or tomorrow, it's not from Hashem, the Rambam says that is achzarius. That's the term he uses. Now, who exactly I'm being cruel to? Maybe I'm being cruel to myself. But the attitude, the fact that the Rambam uses the same description in both locations, gives you the impression that if a person doesn't mourn over a loved one, more than anything, it's because he's forgetting this Gemara. Because there's a message for him in that Avelos that, nothing happens by accident. There's some lesson I need to take from it. And I should realize that...
lacking in feeling?
What's that?
Is it lacking in feeling?
Or? Lacking in feeling, but specifically a feeling that responds to Hashgacha Pratis. That everything happens for a reason, and I can't just... being cold in that scenario is also saying, I'm not feeling the hand of God. in this scenario. So it works both ways. If you're totally cold, that's denying Hashem's involvement. And if you cry too much, you're also denying Hashem's involvement. And we have to find some sort of balance in between.
When Aaron lost his son.
Yeah, yeah. So the Nitziv, you check out the Nitziv over there. We'll talk about it another time maybe, but the Nitziv addresses that question. Was Aaron silent and totally insensitive and totally just impervious? Or was there something else going on there? Okay, not for now, but this is a big sugi. We have to spend a lot of time on this.
What's the little translation, Keren Zavis?
Keren Zavis means the corner. Okay? All right, let's continue. The Gemara says, last line, Lo shel nashim li'olam ne'akavod. So this is going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that when we carry out the Aron, but in those days it wasn't an Aron, when we carry out a woman who passed away, they used to have like a stretcher, okay? And if it was a man, they would put the stretcher down in the street, in the Rechava, in the town square, and they would all get together and they had that spadim, and they would continue with the funeral procession. But the Mishnah says we don't put women in the street like that because mipnei hakavod, because of honor. We haven't really established what that honor is. Parenthetically, it doesn't apply nowadays because of the fact that all people are placed in a casket.
Yishalayim, they put you right down the stretcher.
Yishalayim is a little bit different. Yeah, okay. But they don't put anyone just down, you know, in the town square. We go as soon as we can to
yeah. I went to they got the right in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. Amr Nardoi. So in Nardoi, they said on this Mishnah, Lo Shanu Elachaya, Avashar Nashim Anichim. This Mishnah that says you don't put the woman out on the street before the burial, that's true only by a woman who is pregnant at the time of her death, but not for other women. What is the rationale? The reason why you don't, there's a lot of dam. What's that?
Childbirth.
Right, right.
So there's still
dam, right? So if a woman dies in childbirth, so it would be very disgraceful if she's lying there and she's bleeding, actively bleeding. Rabbi Lazar Omar Afilu Shar Nashim. Rabbi Lazar says, no, this is a halacha that applies to all women, perhaps because of this reason, even a woman who is not, who did not die from childbirth, but there may be other bodily fluids, it might be bleeding, which would not necessarily be present for a man, and that would end up being a bizayin for the mace. The chsiv, how do we learn this? There's a pasuk, it seems to be a din d'oraisa that teaches us that we don't delay the burial of the mother. But Thomas Shom Miriam Batikaver Shom. Pasuk says Miriam died there, Pashas Chukas, she died there, and she was buried right there. What does that imply? Samach Lemisa Kvura, that very close to the death, the Kvura should occur. Very interesting. I can't hold back. That Lashon of the Pasuk, Thomas Shom Miriam Batikaver Shom, she was buried there. That's a similar Lashon is found in the Gemara in Shabbos, I think that Peizayim Peiches, it says that Hashem held the Har Sinai above the Jewish people. Right? And he says, Im tekablu mutav, if you accept the Torah, great. Vimlav sham tehek furaskam, there will be your burial. So the Mepharshim asks, what do you mean sham tehek furaskam? Po tehek furaskam, right here, I'm going to drop the mountain right on top of you. So the Mepharshim say, no, if you accept the Torah right now, and it'll be good. But if you think that you'll actually be doing yourself a favor in relinquishing the Torah, you'll see down the line, When you're not holding true to the mitzvos, then ultimately that will bring about your downfall. That will be your demise. And we see times like Purim coming up. You know, the death that was decreed against the Jewish people was because they fell short of their Kabbalah Torah. And Kimu v'Kiblu, they reaffirmed that acceptance of the Torah.
So is that how I say applied today? That there's a difference in the delaying time between man and woman?
It's not. Either because the women are in a casket as well, or because what we do, we don't really have this practice of staying out in the public square. Mm-hmm. We move things along, and it's not like there's a rush to bury. It's no more rush for a woman as opposed to a man. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. Once we're on the topic of Miriam, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Oh, by the way, some people learn it. The Medrash learns it from Rachel, because also Rachel was buried right there, right, or right on the street. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Af Miriam ben Nishika Mesa. Miriam died with Misas Neshika. Misas Neshika, again, it's hard to really define it, but Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kisses the individual and their neshama departs. Rabbeinu Bechaya says what that means is that it's almost like the neshama is so pure, even at the end of a long life, that it just sort of melds into its source. right? The reason why not every person dies with nisus nashika is because there's a purification process that they have to undergo. They become so steeped in physicality that you can't just go right back to Hashem as the source of all neshamas like that. You have to relinquish the physicality, and it's a process that builds up until a person is ready to enter Gan Eden. But a big tzaddik or tzaddikas like Miriam, even at the end of their life on this world, there is a seamless transition right back to the Ribbono Shel'olam. So that's what's described by Mises Nashika. How do we know that she got the privilege of Mises Nashika? Asya Sham Sham Imosha Kseir Shava. The word Sham, like we just saw, appears by Miriam, and it also appears by the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gzeir Shava says, just like Moshe Rabbeinu died with Mises Nashika, so too Miriam died with Mises Nashika as well. Umid Neima Lo Nemar Ba Al Pi Hashem. Why doesn't it say by Miriam that she died by the mouth of Hashem, which is the terminology the pasuk uses elsewhere to imply that a tzaddik died with a mises neshika? So the Gemara says, "Ben deisha gnai hadavar laomro." It's not a very respectful way to talk about Hashem, creating that imagery of Hashem kissing a woman. So therefore, we have more of a veiled reference to the mises neshika that Miriam experienced. Okay, Amr Biyami. Lama nismacha misas Miriam leparshas Parah. Why is it that in Parshas Chukas we have the death of Miriam, and that's the same parsha, the beginning of the parsha, where we have the mitzvah of Paraduma? So Gemara says, Lo melcha ma paraduma mechaperes, af misasan shel tzedikim mechaperes. To teach us that in the same way that there's an atonement factor, a paraduma, interesting, we don't usually think of paraduma as atonement. We think of it as a purification. Right? Nevertheless, the Torah calls it so it has a status of a korban chatos, even though another anomaly of the paraduma is that it's not brought in the Beis Hamikdash. We have a handful of avodas that don't take place in the Beis Hamikdash. One of them is paraduma. The other one is the soyer la'azazel. Okay, that's really the exception to the rule. Everything else has to happen inside the Beis Hamikdash. But here, the Gemara says that the chatos identification of paraduma serves to be mechaper and atone for sins. Likewise, the misa of tzaddikim also atones. Misa of tzaddikim also atones. Now, you could ask a very simple question. Of all the things that you wanted to demonstrate, why a paraduma? Right? Every carbon, a regular carbon chatas, has a power to atone, right? So maybe, I wouldn't wish it on Miriam, but maybe she should have died in Parshas Vayikra when we talk about the carbon chatas or some other part of the Torah. So the Mefarshim say, the Mefarshim in Yaakov, that here is an additional chiddush. Here's trying to tell you that even the misa of a tzaddikas is mechaper. Okay, here's an additional dimension of the Misa of Tzadekes. Rabbeinu Chanan actually says, you see from here, the Misa of Tzadekes is mechaper, and Kal v'chomer, the Misa of Tzadikim. I cannot figure out for the life of me why I would have thought that a Misa of a Tzadik is more, more rational, that should bring atonement than the Misa of a Tzadekes. I don't know. You know, we think of each, the men and the women each having their role in attaining a level of righteousness, in their own way. Why should we think that one more than the other? Perhaps, just thinking, who exactly does the Misa achieve atonement for? A tzaddik. Who would we say for the whole kibbutz, right? So maybe the tzaddikas, the Rebbetzin, is acknowledged more, we would think, on a private level. Right? She's not out in front, and leading the charge. She does her, Miriam was a public figure, but more for the women. It wasn't as widespread, right? So maybe the chiddush over here is that the even though the woman's efforts may be more behind the scenes, but don't think for a moment that that's any less of a virtue and an important contribution for Klal Yisrael than the rabbi who has to be, in the front of the tzibur. Maybe that's a pshat. I don't know.
More spiritual, that's when they have less mitzvahs because of that.
That's what some people say. That's what some people say, yeah. Okay, yeah, I don't know. I think we have to ask that question for the women. But yes, there are many accolades that women have in Ruchnias that men have to work a lot harder for, that's for sure. Okay, let's continue. So that's the story. The Misa is Mechaper, just like the Paraduma is Mechaper. If you look at the top Tosos, Ma Paraduma Mechaperes, I asked before, what's the Chatas aspect of a Paraduma? So Tosos says, Pirish Al Maisa HaEgel, the Kapara of the Paraduma was for the Chayit HaEgel, Kedamrinim B'Medrash, Rashi, I think, quotes this at the beginning of Parshas Chukas. Medr says, Mashal leben hashivcha shetinef palteirin shel melech. The ben shivcha, right? The king has a maid, and you know, when the maid has a child, and you know, when the what happens when the child is sick and can't go to school, so he tags along with his mother that day, right? You know, so you have a little kid running around the palace, and he's making a mess, and you know, it's dirty. So Omer HaMelech, Tavo Imo, his mother has to come and sweep up the you know, to clean up the garbage. So symbolically, again, this has to be on the sort of deeper level, but symbolically, the Egel was a child, right? It's a baby. So the mother, a full-grown para, has to be the one to bring the kapara. Again, that has a much deeper explanation, but that's the kapara aspect. That there was definitely an element of the paraduma that was machaper for the cheder ego. Okay, let's continue. The Gemara says, Amr Belazar, Lam nismu chamisas arn labigde kahuna, ma bigde kahuna machaprin, af misosan shal tzadikim mechaperis. Belazar says we have a juxtaposition of Aaron and the Big Day Kohuna, okay? Aaron, the Misa of Aaron and the Big Day Kohuna, to teach you that just like the Big Day Kohuna, the Gemara in, I think it's in Zavachim, goes through each one of the eight begadim the Kohen Gadol would wear and tells you which one is keneged a different Avera, so the Misa of Atzad can also be Mechaper in the same way that the Big Day Kohuna can. I just want to mention, I think there's an important comment that it doesn't mean like this is magic necessarily. It could be there's an element of wiping clean, that when a tzaddik dies, it's such a loss to the generation that it Hashem says, you know, it's a form of suffering that we all go through, and suffering is a way that we atone for many averos. But it could mean something else. It could mean that as long as the tzaddik is alive, right, so then the tzaddik prevents certain retribution against the generation. Okay, he prays for them, right? So it delays, it doesn't wipe away the Avera, but it helps to prevent a kitrug against the people. So maybe that's what the Misa does. The Misa helps stay the punishment, and ideally, the reaction when we lose someone great is to increase our Avodas Hashem to do tshuva, and as a result, try to make up for what we lost, because the tzaddik no longer being here can provide that same protection. I wanna in the last 5 minutes or so, I wanna go back to the topic of Sudas Havro. We didn't have time for this last week. I wanted to share with you a fascinating ha'ara, a little bit of lumdus about what we discussed last week, which was the requirement immediately after the burial for members of the community to provide a meal. Okay? So now there seems to be a contradiction between our sugyas in Moed Katan and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara Moed Katan tells us, right, we know that Yom Tov, on the one hand, a Kohen's not normally allowed to become Tamei, right? But if it's one of the Zayin Krovim, then the Kohen does become Tamei nonetheless, right? Part of his observance of Avelis is to overlook his normal Kedusha status of being a Kohen and go ahead and become Tamei no matter what. The exception to that rule is the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol stays in Beis HaMikdash and continues his Avodah and doesn't observe Avelis like everybody else. Can't become Tamei. So what does that imply? It implies that if the burial by the Kohanim is an expression of Avelis and the Kohen doesn't take part in that, the Kohen Gadol doesn't take part in that, it means that Kohen Gadol is exempt from Avelis. Now, what is that about? So it could be the Peshat is because a Kohen Gadol we find in Daf Yud Dalid, the Gemara says that Kohen Gadol kol hashana karegel kuli amudami. Kohen Gadol the whole year, it's like a yantif for him. What's normally the function of a yantif? It cancels Avelis, right? So Kohen Gadol is always, he's always celebrating yantif. His role is 365 days a year to be celebrating yantif. And that would override his Avelis. And even when he is, you know, he suffers a loss, he still brings karbanos and so forth. Salvechik had a famous explanation. I think he shared this on a number of occasions. The pshat in that is because what is the ultimate contradiction to sadness and tsar being only lifnei Hashem. The closer one is to God, the more the simcha is apparent. The more simcha is felt. The closer you get to Hashem's inner sanctum, there's no room for sadness, because rejoicing in Hashem's closeness, one expression is what we're talking about. The more that you're close to Hashem, the more you appreciate even the things that are negative in life to the human eyes are actually good, right? Kishem shemavarach al ha tov, kach mavarach al ra. you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu has something behind. So the Kohen Gadol is as close as you get. His job was to be there all the time, Beis HaMikdash, and just like on Yontif, when we were Olal Regal, we're as close as we can to Hashem, there's no Avelis. Kohen Gadol, who's always there, never has any Avelis. Problem is, that's what it says in the Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, though, explicitly talks about how you provide a Sudas Havra for a Kohen Gadol. I think last week we spoke about providing the Sudas Havra for the Nasi. The Gemara talked about how you provide Sudas Havra for the Kohen Gadol as well. So which one is it? Either Kohen Gadol has Avelis or he doesn't have Avelis. So the you know what the Pshat is? The Pshat is that we misunderstood something. In reality, it could be Sudas Havra is not a din in Avelis, but it's a din in Nicham Avelim. Just because an Ovel eats a Sudas Havra doesn't mean it's a function of his Shiva. On the contrary, it's more the responsibility of the people to provide the Suda, and it's coming from their mitzvah, not his mitzvah. Right? When the Ovel eats the Sudas Havra, is he fulfilling his din of Avelis by not eating his own food? Or are the people who brought the meal, they're getting their mitzvah of Sudas Havra, their mitzvah of Nicham Avelim? Okay? So if that's the case, so there's still a mitzvah to be menachim him, even if there isn't a mitzvah for him to be an ovel. And if you go that far, so and it's a part of nicham avelim, then there are a lot of nafkaminas. I'll give you a couple examples. This is one thing Rosh Shapiro says, very very practical. I'll before we get to that, we have 3 minutes left. So I once spent a lot of time coming up with all different nafkaminas. One nafkamina would be the concept of halacha k'divri hamekel ba'ovel. Remember we spoke about that? That if you have a machlokas haposkim about halacha and avelus, you can automatically choose the more lenient opinion. We said that doesn't apply to kriya, for example, right? Because either it's a din in avelus or it's outside of the realm of avelus. But if we say that sudas havra is not a din in avelus, it's a din in nicham avelim, that you don't have the right to automatically take a more makel stance, okay? That would be one kula application. See if I can pull up another one quickly. Okay, I don't have it offhand, but I'll read to what Rosh Hashanah says. Very interesting. What is this notion of Sudas Havra? Very often, if the kfura happens in the middle of the day, and it's there's not a lot of time for the neighbors, for the members of the community to get things together, maybe they're at work, so they can't always work on providing the ovel with the Sudas Havra after the kfura. So what do they do instead? So in certain communities, what they'll do is they'll actually bring over the Sudas Havra at night, the night before, right? Meaning, what's the scenario? Person, let's say, they lose a relative at night. The levaya is going to be 1 o'clock in the afternoon, right? But a lot of people are at work. We're not going to be able to deliver the Suda in order for it to be there when you come back from the cemetery. So what do we do? We'll put it in the fridge the night before, right? So Rav Shachter says, maybe not. If we hold that Sudas Havra din in Nicham Avelim, then you can't fulfill the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim before the burial, right? So maybe that would not fulfill the mitzvah. You have to wait until the person is actually in that state where they're ripe for Nicham, as it were, to provide the Sudas Havra. If it's just a din that the Ovel can't eat from his own food the first meal after the Kfura, then it doesn't matter when you deliver the food. It's just a question of who you eat from when you actually eat. Okay? Just to close, Rav Shechter, talks about the different sides of this question, and he explains what each one would say is the philosophical notion behind the Sudas Havra, so to speak. If you say it's a din in Avelis, Hainir Loma Degeder in Yanuhu Laharos Hechshakol B'nei Adam Kulim Tzrichom Echad L'Sheni, if it didn't avelus, it's by not eating my own food. So what am I saying? I can't even fend for myself. I'm dependent on others. So by a person demonstrating that I'm dependent on others, it helps emphasize the loss. When you lose someone, a member of the community, then that person's contribution to the general public is no longer present. And that's an expression of mourning. Okay? If you say that the pshat is because of nicham avelim, right? So here's the last nafkamina. What if for some reason no one is able to provide the suda at all? Whatever, he lives on a desert island. So if it's a din in avelus, so then you still can't eat even if no one provides you with anything. Because you're not allowed to eat for yourself from your own property, your own food, in that first meal. But if the pshat is that it's nicham avelim, that I can't eat from my food because then I would be robbing the community of them providing the meal for me. There's no one to provide the meal. Then I'm not stealing anybody's opportunity for nicham avelim, and I'd be able to eat from my own food in that scenario. Okay, we'll stop here. Can I read you one more story? Can I read one more story? Okay. I just, last one, mom's last one. It gets back to the question of just dealing with loss appropriately. There was a Yosef Erlin, this is from the Rav Schwab on Chumash. Quick story. Yosef Erlinger was the son of the famous Avram Erlinger, Rav Schwab's grandfather. Yosef was tragically killed in a car accident at a young age, not long after his mother died in the 1918 flu pandemic. His father Avram was terribly saddened and depressed by the tragedies that befell him. On the last night of the Shiva for Yosef, a brother of the deceased had a dream. His mother came to him and said, "Let your father know that he's mourning too much and tell him the following story. When I was pregnant with this child, Yosef, who was killed in the car accident, Elio Anavi came to me in a dream and told me two things. First, that I would live to be 100 years old, and second, that the child within me would be stillborn. I pleaded that the child should be allowed to live and given years for my long life. That was the end of the dream. In the morning, Rafal told his father what he had dreamt. They added the years of Bertha's life and the years of Yosef's life and equaled 100 years. So, not everyone has Elio Anavi giving them a heads up and a preview. But we have to believe that just because Elio Anavi doesn't tell to everybody what's really going on, it doesn't mean that it's not actually part of the heavenly calculations. Okay, thank you so much. Have a great night, everybody. Yashar Koach.
We have 6 people left.
Thank you.